Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events relating to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Welcome again to our show tonight. We're glad that you have joined us, and we hope that you enjoy your time with us tonight. This is Polygamy, What Love Is This? And I am your host, Doris Hansen. I was born and raised in a polygamy group, and we are here doing this show to talk about polygamy. We were taught from the cradle that polygamy was the only way to please God, and if you wanted to get into celestial glory, you had to live polygamy to do so. And we want to show that that is not the case. Tonight, our discussion is going to beg the question, is God prejudiced? Does he have his favorites? Did he create people to be in a caste system so that some people were just plain lower than other people in his scheme of things, perhaps because of some lack of valiancy in a presumed pre-existence? This is a live television program, and it's a telephone call-in show. Our telephone number is 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820, and we do invite you to call in with your questions or comments. If you are a new viewer tonight, we welcome you to the program, and we hope you enjoy it. You can go to our website, whatloveisthis.tv, and watch all of our previous shows on streaming video there. If you would prefer to make your comments by email, you can do so at tv@aboutpolygamy.com. I'd like to mention that we did have our monthly discussion group last Monday night. It was a very good group. Those of you who would like to come and aren't coming, you're really missing out. I think you would really enjoy it, and it's very helpful. Our next group meeting is going to be December 14th at 6:30. So if you're interested, email me at tv@aboutpolygamy.com for the details. And I'd also like to remind you that we will give the DVD, Lifting the Veil of Polygamy, absolutely free to those who are in or have been in a polygamy group, or if you're a member of the LDS Church. Just tell us where to send it, and we will send it to you free, no strings attached. Also, the book is Polygamy Biblical. We will also send to you. If you would like to know more about our ministry or to donate to our ministry, you can go to our website, shieldandrefuge.org, and you can find out about us. You can donate online there. If you're in a polygamy group and you want to know how we can help you or answer your questions, you can go to that website, find the contact page. There's articles there about biblical polygamy. Does God really require it? And if you need help or just questions answered, give us a call and we will be happy to help you. We also help people who want to escape from polygamy groups. And you can call our toll-free number, 877-425-9993, to get the help that you need. Everything we hold in complete confidence. And I'd like to remind our viewers one more time about the National Conference on Cults that's being held on November 28th at the Calvary Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. The conference is focused on fostering spiritual discernment and defense of the historic Christian faith. You know, there are counterfeit Christian groups that are abounding throughout the whole world, and non-Christians who are calling themselves Christian denominations. And many, many Christians who are biblically illiterate are being deceived by this. And the conferences like this equip us to be able to defend our historic and pure Christian faith. If you're interested in attending the conference, you can email us for information on how to register. I have a couple of responses from last week's show that I would like to talk about very, very quickly before we get started. We had a call after the program was over at a different telephone number. Please remember that when you call in regarding the show, that our phone number is 801-973-8820. That's the phone number that you call for questions or comments regarding the show. We did have a call from a woman by the name of Barbara. She accused me of giving out false information about Todd Compton. She didn't tell me what I said that was false. She didn't tell me what the truth was or anything. She just accused me of false information. So, Barbara, tell me what it is that I said that was incorrect. Please call the show number, and if I have said something incorrect, I would really like to know it. But to my knowledge, everything I said was true. We also had a call from Rami, and he wanted me to tell him where in the Bible it tells us that Jesus is God and where in the Bible it tells us that Jesus is the Savior. Rami, you also called the wrong telephone number, so please remember to call the TV number when you want to ask questions regarding the show. Also, I would suggest that anyone interested in questions like this can get a good reference, cross-reference Bible, and also a concordance. And there is a scripture, Titus chapter 2, verse 13, that tells us that Jesus Christ is our great God and our Savior. You can take that verse, and if you have a good cross-reference Bible, you can find many, many places in the Bible that tells us that Jesus is God and that He is also our Savior. These scriptures are really not hard to find, but I do find that many people take a very difficult time trying to twist them to mean something that they really don't. And also last week, I had given a personal message to someone by the name of TJ, which I don't normally do on the show. And I did get a response from that message. I'd like to share some of this response with our viewers so that you will know what we're about. The email said, Doris, thank you for saying something to TJ at the beginning of your show last Thursday. I wanted to let you know that she is getting out of her polygamy group, and she has found a safe place. We have found a safe place for her and her children to go, and she is so happy. Your words gave her strength. She felt very excited about her new life, but also had faith that God would protect her and be there for her as He always has been. Thank you for your support and encouraging words to me as well. I feel a strength I never knew I had before. I think throughout my whole life that I never really truly felt the most absolute freedom from polygamy until that night I called your show and told my story. I really hope that everyone can learn that there is a much happier way to live and that it is without fear of man and God. God loves us all and will never stop. Men can be very, very cruel, but no longer do families in polygamy need to live in fear because of your show and ability to reach them. That's what this show is all about, folks, is helping people find the truth in Jesus Christ, not in polygamy groups. And may I say, there's many people involved in this ministry and in doing this show, and I'd like to thank every single one of them, because without all of them, this show couldn't take place. Thank you, TJ, and thank you, Sammy, for writing to us. I did have an email a few months ago from a gentleman who precipitated the actual doing of the show tonight, the subject matter of our show. He says, I love your show and the great research you've done. Presenting the dehumanizing effects of polygamy is extremely important to becoming free from Mormon doctrine. However, other equally devastating effects not addressed include racism. I adopted a child through the LDS Church. The child is part black. The reaction from the extended Mormon family was crushing. My request to you is you also acknowledge that the racial ban that created so much pain for us no doubt started with Joseph Smith and Brigham Young, a notorious racist, who realized the conflict if black men practiced polygamy with their white and delightsome women. End of email. On the website www.thinkabouteternity.com, the author of that website posted a parallel history of racism and polygamy in the Mormon history. And actually, he offered to be a guest on the show, but he found out he was unable to do so. And so he recommended that I ask Bill McKeever to come in his place. And I asked Bill if he would do that. And he's been on our show several times before, but he graciously agreed to jump in and fill the void with our parallel history discussion. Bill has his own ministry to Christians to help Christians understand Mormonism and to help Mormons understanding the Christian Bible and biblical grace. And he has his own website, mrm.org. And he also has recently published a book called In Their Own Words, which we highly recommend that you get for your research. Bill, thanks for coming again.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Would you like to say something to our viewers about your book, how you happened to do it, and where they could buy the book?
Well, In Their Own Words was basically the child of a column that we have in our newsletter called Mormonism Research. We have a little section called Did They Really Say That? And we've been doing this for so many years, just putting little snippets of what Mormon leaders and what lay Mormons have said and what has been said about them and things like that in the newsletter. And they would only, you know, be shown for like one little blip and that would be it. And I thought, you know, we've got this huge file of all these quotations. We need to do something more with this. And so back in 2003, I started working on putting them together topically, mm-hmm. not topographically, that'd be mm-hmm. a map, but I started putting them together topically. And so what I've done is I've taken like thousands of various quotations, mostly from Mormon leaders, many of them from conference messages and from books, periodicals that Mormons would not only recognize, but many of them respect. And I also included statements from Brigham Young University professors, Mormon mm-hmm. apologists. I kind of put a whole gamut in here, mainly mm-hmm. so people can see what Mormons have believed about these various issues. But because they're put arranged topically, if a person wants to know very quickly, well, what did, for instance, Brigham Young teach regarding the seed of Cain or whatever, mm-hmm. you could go right to the book and you could mm-hmm. find out those answers mm-hmm. Relatively quickly.
So. I'll say, and it's a nice big size book for any of you who'd like to buy. Where could they pick it up?
They can get it off our website at mrm.org. You can get it at Amazon, but it's actually cheaper at our website. So if they want to get it there, just click on the bookstore. And I think there's actually an icon on the homepage that they can click on, and they can take them right to it. But,
well, I highly recommend it. It's a very good, but a lot of work put into that, I can tell.
It was. I'm glad it's over.
There's two doctrinal practices that we're going to be talking tonight, which is racism and polygamy, and they do share some interesting parallels. And I think the most obvious question is, was there ever a genuine revelation to begin or to end either practice? And so we're going to be talking about that tonight and everything in between. But I did receive an email, Bill, I'd like you to answer first. I just received this the other day from Nelson. He said, I'd like to know if BYU is still teaching their scripture story of why being black is a curse. Although as of 1978, blacks may hold the priesthood, I attended BYU in 1985 and a professor told the story of the curse. Are they still advocating inferiority? I have no idea how to answer that. Perhaps you have something you can say about that.
Well, not attending BYU myself, I couldn't say firsthand if that's still going on. But most definitely when it came to the teachings of black people, or what was known as the seed of Cain, which has to be distinguished from the Lamanite people that are mentioned specifically in the Book of Mormon, that definitely the seed of Cain was not allowed to have any priesthood blessings until 1978. And so they've just celebrated last year the 30th anniversary of that. But when it comes to the inferiority, there's been some kind of mixed messages on that. I'm glad I just threw this in on my list of quotations, but let me read you something that Joseph Fielding Smith, who was the 10th president of the Mormon Church, said, and this is in his book, Answers to Gospel Questions, Volume 4, page 170. He says, the Latter-day Saints, so commonly called Mormons, have no animosity towards the Negro. And we have to understand that connotation. That goes back in the 50s and 60s. Uh-huh. He says, we have no animosity towards the Negro. Neither have they described him as belonging to an inferior race. However, if you were to read The Way to Perfection, page 101, which is written by the same person, Joseph Fielding Smith, he says, not only was Cain called upon to suffer, but because of his wickedness, he became the father of an inferior race.
Oh, my.
Moreover, they have been made to feel their inferiority and have been separated from the rest of mankind from the beginning. So, yes, they did teach that they were inferior, and no, they teach that they weren't inferior. And interesting, it's the same person that taught it
that
both ways.
That said it both things.
It was Joseph Fielding Smith, 10th president of the church. Of course, the father-in-law to Bruce McConkie. And so he's a very prominent theologian in the Mormon church during that time period.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes and no.
So I
don't know what's being taught at Brigham Young right now, though. I couldn't tell you.
I think his concern was after the 1978 change in doctrine, would they even still, maybe not necessarily teach their inferiority, but do they still teach the story of Cain was cursed with black skin?
They would probably have to if they get into the book of Abraham, especially around chapter 1, verse 26, because that was the passage that David O. McKay said specifically was the reason why blacks were not allowed to hold the priesthood.
Okay.
Now, what gets really confusing about this is, I'll tell you, Doris, I was quite amazed last year on the 30th anniversary of the repeal of the ban, against blacks holding the priesthood, that two spokesmen for the LDS Church actually went public and made it appear that this was never even a doctrine in the Mormon Church. And I have to be honest with you, when I watched this, it's one of those falling off the chair type moments.
Yes.
Because you have, for instance, Sheldon F. Child, who's a 70 in the Mormon Church. There was an article in the Deseret News newspaper, June 7th, 2008. Deseret News, June 7th, 2008. It was an article titled, LDS Marking 30-Year Milestone. And this is what he said. Speaking of the priesthood ban, he said, "When you think about it, that's just what it is, folklore. It's never really been official doctrine. I know there have been some misconceptions and some statements made by people in the past, but as Elder Bruce R. McConkie said, we've reached a new and additional light and knowledge through revelation. And even the folklore is obsolete now because of the fact we have the revelation." Now let me go on with this, because it goes on. We have Mark Tuttle, who is a spokesman for the Public Relations Department of the LDS Church, on the same day in the Salt Lake Tribune was quoted as saying, "This folklore is not a part of and never was taught as doctrine by the church."
Oh, it was too.
Now,
how could they get by
with that?
See,
this is the thing. This is a question that I was asking. Now, when they celebrated the 30th anniversary, I was down at Temple Square, and I was handing out a tract that we had put together that had a lot of the quotations on this very subject. And no doubt Mr. Child and Mr. Tuttle's comments had been circulating, you know, at this time. So I was asking Mormons that were attending the celebration on Temple Square as they were walking past me, I was asking them this question: if it was never a doctrine, why did you need a revelation to reverse it? And I waited for answers from people walking past me, and nobody would take me up on this.
Okay.
I mean, it makes sense here. He says, and even, this is what Child says, "and even the folklore is obsolete now because of the fact that we have the revelation." And I'm thinking, wait a minute.
But folklore doesn't become obsolete. It's always folklore.
Folklore is always folklore, but why would you need a revelation to reverse it?
That's true.
It doesn't make
Absolutely.
Any sense, because on every other issue dealing with Mormonism that tends to spring out of folklore or some misconception of Mormon teaching, I've never seen in the history of the Mormon Church where they've ever had to come out with something so profound as what they did in June of 1978 mm-hmm. when it came to the priesthood revelation. I mean, that's how serious mm-hmm. it was. But let me go on with this, because first of all, to say that it was never a doctrine is absolutely incorrect. And I want to speak to the heart of the Latter-day Saint people, that if you believe that this was never a doctrine because of men such as Sheldon Child and Mark Tuttle, I urge you to do some serious
yes,
checking into this,
absolutely.
Because they are not telling you the truth. Let me show you something here. This is a statement, again, from Joseph Fielding Smith, the 10th prophet, seer, and revelator of the Mormon Church. He says this. He says, "This doctrine did not originate with President Brigham Young, but was taught by the prophet Joseph Smith at a meeting of the general authorities of the church held August 22, 1895. The question of the status of the Negro in relation to the priesthood was asked, and the minutes of that meeting say, quoting the minutes, President George Q. Cannon, who was a member of the first presidency, remarked that the prophet taught this doctrine. Notice he didn't say policy. Notice he didn't say folklore. Mm-hmm. He calls it a doctrine, that the seed of Cain could not receive the priesthood nor act in any of the offices of the priesthood until the seed of Abel should come forward and take precedence over Cain's offspring. What he's referring to is that Brigham Young taught that there would become a time when blacks would be able to hold the priesthood, but it would not be until every one of the seed of I'm trying to think of the phrase that he uses, and it's escaping me right now, but it was basically not until everybody else had the opportunity to get it first. In other words, it wouldn't take place until after the resurrection. So when you read the declaration at the end of the Doctrine and Covenants, they talk about a day when it would be lifted. But what they don't tell you is that leaders up until that time were saying it wouldn't be lifted until after the resurrection. It wasn't supposed to happen during this mortality. Let me also quote, this is taken from an official statement of the first presidency to BYU President Ernest L. Wilkinson, dated in August of 1951. It's also quoted in John Lewis Lund's book, The Church and the Negro, on page 89. This is what it says. The attitude of the church with reference to the Negroes remains as it has always stood. It is not a matter of the declaration of a policy, but of direct commandment from the Lord, on which is founded the doctrine of the church from the days of its organization, to the effect that Negroes may become members of the church, but they are not entitled to the priesthood at the present time. And in that same statement, it says the position of the church regarding the Negro may be understood when another doctrine of the church is kept in mind, namely that the conduct of spirits in the premortal existence has some determining effect upon the conditions and circumstances under which these spirits take on mortality. Under this principle, there is no injustice whatsoever involved in this deprivation as to the holding of the priesthood by Negroes. So here we have a statement by the first presidency. We have a prophet of the church using the word doctrine. So to say that it was never an official doctrine, I think if that's really the case, the Mormon church needs to apologize to a lot of its black members.
Yes, they do.
Because priesthood authority is absolutely essential to exaltation and godhood in Mormon theology. And to be married in the temple is absolutely essential if you're going to be sealed for time and eternity and without priesthood.
Their polygamy doctrine, what it was absolutely essential too, that they have.
Exactly. And you have a not a huge amount of members in the Mormon church at this particular time that were being deprived of this, but you were having members. If it was not really a doctrine, I think it tends to show the lack of discernment on the part of the leadership in the church, that they would continue fostering this folklore that started somewhere
previously. Well, it's a lack of discernment of the members, too, because they should hold them accountable. They should know what's going on and hold them accountable for this. They're rewriting history and redefining their terms again. It's all over.
But how do you do that? Because in Mormonism, this whole priesthood structure is an individual lay member does not have priesthood authority to correct anybody above him.
That's
he can
right.
only go on a level plane or below. He can't go up.
That's true.
Only the president of the church has the authority to speak for the church. So if a member in the church was upset with this, and believe me, there were members that were, but a lot of them, if they chose to be vocal about it, would find themselves being reprimanded for doing so.
Or excommunicated if they said too much.
And so many members just remain silent on this. You see, The Mormon people, the fundamentalists too, they don't have the luxury that we do.
I was born and raised in a polygamy group. We were taught racism from the beginning. We were taught it. It was ground into us. In fact, that was one of the early questions I had as I was growing up. I asked my mother, if God made everybody, why? We were taught that the blacks were born to go to hell. They had no choice. There was no way that they could have redemption.
Well, John Taylor said they were the devil's representatives.
Yeah,
he said that twice. He was the third president of the Mormon.
And as far as I know, there is no change in the doctrines of the fundamentalist Mormons. I can't say individually, but as far as I know for groups, there is no change. They are still very involved in racism.
Now, a common argument that's raised at this point in the conversation is, and it's a true criticism, they would say, well, what about within Christianity? Isn't there a lot of racism within many professing Christians? I mean, you look down in the South and you see problems down in there, and certainly I don't think it's as bad now as it probably could have been before, years ago, but I don't know, not living there, not experiencing it firsthand. But I would say, yeah, I'm willing to admit that. That is wrong.
There has been
a problem.
Mm-hmm.
However, it has been condemned. It has been condemned soundly.
And it's not in our scriptures.
It's not
like
in our scriptures.
It is in
it's
the Mormon
not supported
scriptures.
By that. And besides, you would think that if we are a part of apostate Christendom, as they often say, you should expect that kind of behavior, I would think. But why are we getting it from you?
Good question.
You are supposed to be the one that's supposed to be leading the way when it comes to what is supposed to be true. And if it's true like this today, it should have been true before. Really, what has caused this change? Because if it was in fact something that had to have been done by the individual in the pre-existence, and that's what Mormon leaders actually taught, that there was a war in heaven, that God's spirit children chose up sides, and some were valiant for the cause of Christ, some were following Lucifer, one of his sons, and then there was the group of God's spirit children that were not as valiant as they could have been. They were not neutral. Brigham Young made that very clear, that they were not neutral, but they were not as valiant as they could have been. So as their punishment, they would still be allowed to come down in mortality, but they would not be allowed to hold that priesthood authority, which would make it able for them to become exalted or become gods or experience all the benefits, the perks of the Mormon religion as everybody else would. In order to distinguish who these people were, they were given the dark skin, the black skin, and as Brigham Young said, the black skin and the flat nose. That's his quote,
that's
not
what
mine.
He said.
Okay.
I know.
That's
my quote. I've read that.
So this would distinguish who could be given this priesthood authority and who wouldn't. It made it easy for the Mormon Church to target who could not be given this priesthood authority. Now, my question is, and I can't really get a good answer out of anybody who has any authority in the Mormon Church, that if that was the reason why these spirit offspring of God the Father are born with black skin, was merely to know who couldn't get the priesthood, and now that's not even an issue any longer, why are they still being born with black skin?
Why are they still being born with black skin? Absolutely right.
I had one Mormon missionary tell me it was genetics, and I tried to explain to him that it's always been genetics.
Yeah, it has always been.
But I think that's a dilemma for them to figure out.
I think that's an interesting question. One of the questions that I would have on this parallel is there any reason to believe that because the Mormon Church has, in 1890 with the Manifesto, they have stopped the practice of polygamy, but they still believe it.
Yes.
Now, in 1978, they stopped the practice of racism, but do they still believe
it? The teaching. Well, I would say the teaching.
Yeah, okay.
Racism is a hard thing for people to all of a sudden stop.
You can't, you know? Especially if you've been raised to be prejudiced. It's very difficult.
If you have not been regenerated, I can see an exceptional struggle at that. But you're right. It ends in 1978. And if I remember correctly, reading some newspaper accounts of when this change took place, when they asked members, well, what do you think about this? It was interesting to find that a lot of them didn't really look at this as something of a joyous occasion. They looked at it almost something as a negative experience, liking it, and I think in one article, to the bombing of Pearl Harbor.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm thinking, wow, that's not real positive. You would think that you would rejoice that another of the human race would be allowed to experience the best your religion has to offer.
Well, one of the, and I don't remember which, you might know who made this quote, that they didn't even feel the need to go proselytize the black people because they were not eligible for
these blessings. There are statements to that effect. And there was also, I think, some repercussions in some of those nations where they didn't want the Mormons coming in because of these teachings. So it did hinder their proselytizing efforts.
And you know, I've seen articles on TV recently. There was a special about the telling that the Mormon Church has such an affinity towards the blacks. Mm. Now, I'm not saying they do or don't now, but they, again, they're glossing over what they've done in the past, never admitting that they've ever been wrong in the attitudes that they've had. They've hurt a lot of people with these doctrines in the past.
I think you've hit it right on, because the Mormon Church preaches in every general conference the necessity to repent. But yet the Mormon Church as a corporation doesn't feel it has any need to repent
about
this.
In any of those.
And yet look, as you said, the pain that it has caused a lot of members over all these years. I mean, there was even criticism in last year when they had the 30th year celebration that there was no one from the Council of the Twelve, and there was no member of the First Presidency that was actually at that celebration.
Whoa.
There was a 70, and that was it. And some people were remarking that they felt a little snubbed on that. And really, this was the first time that the church had even gotten involved in any type of official celebration on that anniversary.
So they had what we call, or what this webpage calls, a declaration, which I call the order to cease and desist. Mm-hmm. It's after the Doctrine and Covenants, and it's official declaration one, and that's the manifesto.
The
official
declaration,
yeah.
The press release. That's what it is.
And declaration two is the 1978
right.
press release, and yet they both. The polygamy was started by God, was called a holy practice. The same with the racism.
Mm-hmm.
God supposedly did this. He condemned the blacks on the racism, and yet on the polygamy issue in 1890. Of course, we all know that it took 1890 to 1904 before they said, "Now we really mean it
right.
for now."
Yeah.
But I found a quote. On the in 1892, the Young Women's Journal said, according to the Young Women's Journal, the church magazine for women, plural marriage is the highest law of God and the law that marks the way to eternal progression. 2 years after the manifesto,
mm-hmm.
2 years after the order to cease and desist,
yeah.
they're still teaching it in their Mormon publication.
Maybe
that's why this guy wrote, wondered if they were still teaching it in BYU, racism.
Yeah. Well, from what I understand, they're not supposed to be. this is supposed to be something that they're hoping to get back in their past. I just think the Mormon Church misses an awful lot of good opportunities to make things right with people. And
I would agree.
Whatever reason, I think I know the reason, because when you have a hierarchy that is supposed to be, you know, having a hotline to God, so to speak, that these guys are actually God's prophets and God's apostles, and they're making such huge mistakes
mm-hmm.
like this,
mm-hmm.
if they are to admit that we were wrong, like we see them being wrong, and actually say, we got it wrong, we miscued. Now, Bruce McConkie came very close to that when he gave a speech, All Are Alike Unto God. And basically, what's interesting about that mm-hmm. is, he says, you know, we get people saying, wait a minute, you said such and such, and now you say such and such. Well, what does Bruce McConkie do? He rebukes the people for raising the question and says that these people need to get in line and follow the teachings of the living prophet. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, they were following the living prophet before 1978.
Yes.
And now you're saying, now you still have to follow the living prophet, but see, normal thinking people go, this is a contradiction, and unless God has a memory problem, what is going on here? They're asking for an explanation, and the Mormon Church tends to want to sidestep the issues. When they start saying things that it was just folklore, the smarter Mormons know better
than
that. The ones that have read their history, they know that's not true.
And the ones who were raised and maybe in the older generation at that time, they know. They mm-hmm. were, because they were raised from the very beginning of it, from their cradle, as I like to say. Well, we have a lot of calls coming in. Perhaps someone would call in and tell us, if you're going to BYU, are they teaching black inferiority? Are they telling the story of the curse to the seed of Cain? Let's get some phone calls going here. We have, first of all, Eric from Rose Park on line two. Hello, Eric.
Yes.
Yes, you are on the air.
What? Wanted to know if their teachings had it. I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous. If they had any anything to say about Arabs and Latin people and African American or Native American people as well. If they had the same feelings as they did with the black people.
Well, I'll let Bill answer for the other, but speaking from the polygamy group perspective, anybody that had tan or darker skin had that drop of black blood in them, and so therefore they were ineligible. That was the teaching that we had growing up.
It's just all one big race in their opinion. From the Mormon perspective?
From the Mormon fundamentalists, which are the polygamy groups. That's the way we were taught. Bill will answer for the Mormon church perspective.
Well, as far as I understand it, the only race that was targeted as far as being banned from the priesthood was the blacks, which they call the seed of Cain. Mm-hmm. If you had one drop of Negro blood, that was the phrase that Marky Peterson used in a speech that he gave in the 50s called Race Problems as They Affect the Church. He made it clear that if you had just one drop of Negro blood in your system, then you would be banned. You would not be allowed to hold it. Now, as far as Latinos and other races, I've never seen any exclusion in that area. The Lamanites, for instance, mentioned in the Book of Mormon, were, of course, they're allowed to hold the priesthood. In fact, Lamanites, even though they're spoken of in a derogatory manner many times, the Lamanites are supposed to be held to a high esteem at the same time. But there's a lot of very derogatory language in the Book of Mormon that exists to this day. It hasn't been expunged.
That's true.
They did change 2 Nephi 30 verse 6 back in the 1981 edition of the Book of Mormon, where instead of saying white and delightsome, they now reads pure and delightsome.
Right.
But other than that, they haven't changed all the other verses.
Does that help you, Eric?
It does. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Okay. Bart from Kaysville, line 3. Hello, Bart.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, awesome. I think your show is really interesting. I think y'all are very sincere in what you do, but I have occasional issues with some of the historicity of things that you say. And this evening, what you're talking about, I think, is also really interesting. And I've wrestled with this. I think all Mormon people wrestle with this issue. And I don't think it has been addressed satisfactorily. I would concur with that. But I think there's a difference between concepts of doctrine versus revelation versus a management of day-to-day affairs in the church versus inspiration. I think all those things are different. And I think that if you would want to look at something, various doctrines that a church may espouse may be different than a revelation, which is directly from God, yes? So if you have someone who says...
So do you have a question, Bart? Do you have a question
that's my point is I think that you need to differentiate, because you seem to be walking into this, and I think that's a problem.
Okay, I'll let Bill respond to that. Thank you for your call.
I'm not exactly sure what he's saying.
He thinks there's a difference between the way we understand things to be, the way people teach them to be, the way the written word is to be, the way the revelation is.
Well, Bart, all I can say on this is if you go by the statements of the Mormon leaders themselves and you just go back and you read what these men have said in conference messages or in the improvement era or in a lot of their books, I think it becomes very clear. And the bottom line is this: if you were considered a part of the seed of Cain, if you had one drop of Negro blood in your veins, you were not allowed to hold the priesthood. Which very specifically means you are not eligible for exaltation. You are not allowed to be married in the temple. In other words, you would be considered a second-class citizen when it comes to the rest of the members within that same organization. Mm-hmm. That is the bottom line.
That's how
it was carried out. That's how it was taught. And for men like Sheldon Childs and Mark Tuttle to say that this was merely folklore, I think they're pulling one on their own membership. They're betraying their own membership, and they owe it to their membership to be honest with them apologize for if at the very least showing that they are just as ignorant as everybody else when it comes to a lot of issues and they got it wrong all this time, or say that Brigham Young got it wrong, Joseph Fielding Smith got it wrong. Someone needs to come up to the plate and really hold some accountability here.
Yeah, just study your own history. There really is only one way to read some of these quotes, and you can't get them wrong. So just study your own history and go back further than 1978 if you do. Okay, we have line 1, Mike from Ogden. Hello, Mike? Mike?
Hey, Doris. How you doing? I just put my TV on mute. Sorry. Yeah, I just wanted to mention to Mr. Kiefer. Have you ever read the book Mormonism and the Negro?
Yeah, which one? By who?
It's by a guy named John L. Stewart, and it's supplemented
by
William E. Barrett.
Yep.
Okay?
I do have it, yes.
And I wanted just to read something. This is really, because this is what you were talking about earlier.
Okay, Mike, is this very long? Mike?
Harry, I think he was vice president of BYU.
Mike?
He was vice president of BYU back in the 50s. Okay.
Hello, Mike? Mike? Wait a minute. Before you read something, how long is this?
Oh, it's just a short paragraph. It's going to help with what he was trying to, what Brigham Young had said about.
Yeah, we just don't want to get.
What says, statement by the first presidency of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on the Negro Question, 1917, 1951. The attitude of the Church with reference to Negroes remains as it always stood. It is not a matter of the declaration of a policy, but of direct commandments from the Lord. Mm. And it says, on which is founded the doctrine of the Church from the days of its organization. And then further down it says, President Brigham Young said, why are so many of the inhabitants of the earth cursed with the skin of blackness? It comes in consequence of their fathers rejecting the power of the holy priesthood and the law of God, and they will go down to death. And when all the rest of the children receive their blessings in the holy priesthood, then that curse will be removed from the seed of Cain, and they will then come up. And I think that, and then it says, President William Woodruff said the same thing. So that's from 1951, the first presidency of the Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints, verbatim. It's written by a vice president, Brigham Young, from the 50s. I'll get up the air, and it's called Mormonism and the Negro.
Okay, thank you, Mike, for sharing. I think Bill had some of that quotes with him anyway. So,
it's just, you know, supporting the view that this is a statement from the first presidency, and that is supposed to be a legitimate source when it comes to official teaching.
And it was. Well, you could look in the Journal of Discourses; is full of these kinds of quotes too, and some of them are very bristling.
And it's interesting that when you have leaders being quoted in the Journal of Discourses, they said those when they were alive. So they were living prophets.
That's right. They were living prophets. Okay, let's take line one. Mike from Ogden.
Let's get on the air.
Hello? Oh, looks like we...
Okay, are you a first-time caller or have you...
Line two, Jill from Taylorsville. Jill from Taylorsville, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Oh, you're on the air, Jill.
Oh, okay. You sound different on the phone.
Okay.
I want to say is God doesn't change his mind. And that I became a Christian about 18 years ago, and I came out of Mormonism. And anyway, it was... I hate living here because of the Mormons. I just think they run the state. But I saw a show on PBS that was called The Truth about Mormon Blacks. And I was wondering what you think about that. When I watched it, I thought that they were... I could have swore they were Christians. They sang, they were like a black church now, today, and I love those, but... What do you think about that? Why would, if they, I just wonder what the, if they can't have the priesthood, would they have to have whites as the bishopric and stuff, or what do you think? You know what I mean?
Well, I think, Jill, are you asking why would a person want to become a part of this organization if they're not allowed?
And have, what do you think about that? Why would they do that, and what do you think?
Why would they do what?
Why would they be blacks in the Mormon Church, and why would they, how would they run a meeting without the priesthood there?
Well, they would have priesthood holders that would be there. There would have to be priesthood holders that would be present. So that's not that difficult. Does that make sense?
Okay, but you think if it was so against blacks, and I wonder why they would.
Well, Jill, you have to understand.
Be in a flat church, you know what I mean?
Well,
this seems so weird.
Yeah, I can understand what you're saying there, and that's probably a question that maybe a lot of black members have been asked by many people. But still, if they believe that the Mormon Church is true, they're going to many times overlook some of these things and maybe think that it's not all that significant. I would definitely have a problem with that personally.
Yeah,
I would definitely have a problem with that, especially if I saw the Mormon Church on an official level dodging the questions that really need to be answered for the benefit of their people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Well,
thank you. Thank you, Jill. Good night. Okay, an off-the-air comment. The Japanese were not allowed to hold office in the LDS Church in 1950. Are you aware of that?
I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
I wonder what the reason for that was.
If somebody knows. That's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, we have line three, Anonymous from Sandy. Hello, Anonymous. Hello?
Yes?
Are you there?
This is Feliz Martinez, Maria Martinez.
Okay, you're on the air. What's your question?
Oh, I was wanting to comment you guys how wonderful your program is, and I was listening about the Nephites and the Lamanites. It happened to be a Relief Society in a little small town in Arizona, and we were quilting, and one of the ladies, we'd been to the service, and they had said they were happy to see a Lamanite family in the audience. When we were in Relief Society, I asked her what did they mean. She said that God had put two types of people. The Lamanites were the dark skinned, and the light were the Nephites to take care of the Lamanites. And I said, well, you know what? I said, I don't believe in that. I said, and I don't think that you are better than me. We were created equal. I put my needle in my quilt. And I walked away, and I never was back there again. So I want to thank you for letting people know that we are all equal.
Yes, we are.
Created under one God. And thank you so much. God bless you.
Well, thank you, and thanks for calling and sharing. And you know, I've heard so many stories like that. One girl was put in the Indian replacement program where they were put into Mormon homes, and I talked with her. She was hurting really, really badly. She said, this was many years later, she said that family her and her brothers were all put in that home, and she said the children and the parents every day would mock and mimic them because every morning they would wake up and they weren't white. So they were still wicked. And they treated him that way. It was just awful. It was just a heartbreak to hear her story. Okay, Christian from Provo. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah. This is really exciting for me to be on right now. I'm a very I guess first of all, I'd say that I'm black, and I'm a very devout Mormon. And usually I don't usually listen to like these shows, but I have to say that this has been quite objective. In some of the things that it said, and it hasn't really swayed me either way. But I have to say this though, that I being here at BYU has been a really interesting experience. It's been great, and I found that if there's been any kind of, say, racism, it hasn't been much from the church and from its doctrine, as much as it's been from the where the people come from. And so it's been like, it's different if you kind of talk to someone from New York or someone from California. It's all different. And so I think like currently in the church, there isn't this, there isn't a really strong presence of racism. In fact, I don't even think I've experienced one here, but I would say that it's more dependent on where a person is from and the kind of interaction they've had with people.
Okay,
but,
that's good to hear.
Additionally, I just wanted to add that one thing that is missing from your analysis has been that this is not the first time in history that someone has, or I guess the Lord has kept something from a group of people. And so I think maybe you can be able to add that, you know, a little bit. We know about...
Well, Christian, let me say something right here on what you just said. There has never been a time that God has ever kept salvation from a group of people. And when you go back to what the priesthood authority means in the Mormon church, and they kept the priesthood from the blacks, in essence, he was keeping salvation from the black people according to their doctrine. And that just isn't the case. And God doesn't change, like the woman called earlier. God doesn't change.
Well, that's true. You have a really good point there. I guess what I'm trying to say is that the fact that there was a doctrine in place that has evolved over time, it's not the first time that had happened in Christianity, I should make it sound like. And at the same time, too, since you know a lot about Mormonism, you also know that the church believes that a lot of things can be done even after the death of an individual. And so, in a sense, if salvation or if there's some kind of limitation in this life, it does not necessarily preclude that all things pertaining to their eternal progression can never be redeemed or reclaimed. Oh. So all those things kind of factor in to some degree.
Okay.
What do you think?
Well, you're believing in a progressing and changing God and salvation, and we don't. The Bible doesn't teach that. So that's a whole different conversation, however.
Okay, well.
But we do appreciate your call. We thank you, and we're glad to hear.
I don't want to go back and forth because I think this is a really calm show that you have, and so I really respect your views as well. And so I just want to say that thank you for giving people the opportunity to call, and I just want to say that I am black, and I think I feel I have a safe haven in this religion, and I know that to be true. So,
okay, thanks for your call.
Well.
Thank you.
You're very kind. Uh-huh. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Do you have any remarks you'd like to say?
No, I wish I could have lunch with the guy. a little bit longer of a conversation. I'd like to hear some more about his story.
Well, Christian, if you're still watching, you can contact Bill. He'd like to have lunch with you and talk.
Be my treat. I'll come to BYU. I know where the cafeteria is. So.
Okay, so you contact him, or you can call and leave your number, and we can call, give it to him, and he'll call you. But thank you for your call. Okay, Lou in Provo, line 2. Hello, Lou.
Thank you for your call. Yes.
You need to turn your TV down.
I am right now.
Okay.
Okay, I have two comments I'd like to make.
Okay.
One is Alvin R. Dyer, when he was in the first presidency of the church, said that the Negro didn't get the priesthood because they rejected the priesthood of the preexistence.
Mm-hmm.
And another comment I'd like to make is I heard once in the church that it was that the priesthood isn't denied only to the, it's denied only to the Negro in Africa, but not to the Aborigines in Australia. It was just the African Negro that could hold the priesthood. I'd just like to make those comments.
Have you heard that one before?
I haven't heard that one.
Thank you.
I'll look into that. Thank you, Lou.
Thank you very much. Okay, so we've had some good responses, but I do hope the gentleman from Provo will call you back. You wonder when you hear the some of these responses about, well, there's progression, there's changes, and you know, we go with the times and change with the times, and our ideas of what people mean are different and all on. But I'd like to read a couple of notes about polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the parallel is that they treated the two doctrines almost the same way. Mm-hmm. And that's first they believed in it and then they didn't, or at least that's what they said. But one note on polygamy, in the historical record, it said God will not change his law of celestial marriage, which is polygamy. But the man, the people, the nation that oppose and fight against polygamy and the church of God will be overthrown. Well, they've been fighting it now for how many decades, how many years, and it hasn't been overthrown. And the next one is from the Millennial Star. It would be as easy for the United States to build a tower to remove the sun as to remove polygamy from the church. And polygamy's been removed.
Yeah, a lot of bravado.
It's the same way with the racist issue. Mm-hmm. They just change it and rewrite their history. It's interesting. Carol from West Valley in line 3. Hello, Carol.
Yes.
Carol?
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air, Carol. Can you speak up?
Okay. I just first want to say that I really appreciate you being on tonight. I have, for a long, long time had the question about why the blacks were not allowed to be, hold the priesthood in the past. And I have asked several Mormons that question, and I've never been given a straight answer. And then tonight, I feel like that you, you know, really answered my question for me. I do believe that our God is an unchanging God, and that our religion should be the same way. And so it is, you know, and I was born and raised a Mormon, and I'm what you would refer to now, I guess, what they refer to as a Jack Mormon.
Okay. Well, we do appreciate. So, where are you at now? With you're just not going to church. You're not. Are you pulling away from Mormonism?
I'm really not going to church right now.
Uh-huh.
You know, I still very much believe in God, but I just kind of, I guess, I'm religious within myself.
Okay. Well, Carol, if you're interested in Christianity at all, I'd like to talk with you. We could have coffee someday, and I could share some things with you. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye. Okay. Well, we're getting to the end of the show, and looks like there's still some calls coming in, but none comes through. So is there any quick closing remarks you'd like to say?
No. The one caller mentioned Alvin Dyer. I actually was in the church archives, and I pulled out a sermon of his on this very subject, and we quote portions of it in the book in their own words, but it's a wow. I mean, wow, when you read some of this stuff, when they are speaking to other Mormons among themselves without the fear of any outsiders probably hearing some of this message, they were pretty firm in what they were teaching, so it was not very politically correct, that's for sure.
Racism was definitely a doctrine.
Yeah.
Polygamy was definitely a doctrine.
I mean, it insults a lot of people's intelligence when they use comments like what Tuttle has said and what his child has said. I mean, to say it was folklore is just silly.
It is. You know, it's nonsense.
That's dissonance control is all it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Bill, for coming again tonight, and thank the callers for calling, and the viewers for viewing, and we would like to hope that the show tonight did bring out some to our viewers that racism and polygamy both are ugly practices. Racism in any form has never been historical. It's never been commanded or mentioned by God. In fact, Jesus himself was not ashamed to call Ruth his ancestress, the Moabitess. She was black, and he wasn't ashamed to put her in his genealogy. The mark of Cain in the Bible was never mentioned as being black, and yet that's what people use to justify racism. According to Mormon prophets, a single drop of black blood is all it took to be under the curse, and so I think you should look at Joseph Smith, your prophet, because according to his lineage, he came from a black background. And I know at least one polygamy group member who has a lot of black blood running through his veins, and he just claims that God has neutralized it. But if you want to look at Joseph Smith, he claims to be from the tribe of Ephraim. Ephraim was the son of Joseph. Joseph was married to a black Egyptian woman. Therefore, from the Mormons' own original doctrine, he was ineligible to be a member of the priesthood or to be the leader of your church. When I began to study the Bible for myself, I was very grateful to discover that God created us all. He loves each and every one of us, regardless of our color, regardless of where we were born or raised. He just wants all of us to be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth, and we hope that you will seek the truth tonight, that you will find it and follow it. Thanks for watching. We hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving next week, a thankful one, and we appreciate your watching the show. Good night.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org. Or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email@whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.